It's 8:02 on a Tuesday morning, an absolutely beautiful Tuesday morning here in Laguna Beach. Welcome to the Mornings with Ed show. Our guest this morning began his career as a reserve deputy sheriff with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department before being hired as a deputy sheriff with the Orange County Sheriff's Department. We had the opportunity to get him on board in 1996. He joined the Laguna Beach Police Department, and he's worked everywhere. Including patrol officer, field training officer, special investigations unit, detective, sergeant, and lieutenant shift commander. And during his time as captain, he led both the support investigative services and field services divisions. And we welcome this morning, and we are glad to welcome him as chief of police here in Laguna Beach. We welcome Jeff Calvert. Welcome this morning.
Thanks for having me, Ed. I appreciate being here.
I appreciate you being here. I know that among all the city officials, you have about the tightest schedule. So we really appreciate your time with us. And thank you. I think I'm going to just start with, first of all, it's your first time at the radio station.
It is. It's awesome.
I can't believe it's your first time. You've been here all these years. It's your first time. Well, I'm glad it's me. I'm glad it's me. And hopefully when we're done, you're glad it's me. What made you decide to pursue law enforcement?
Well, first off, thanks for having me here. The radio station's been a great partner to the police department and also the city. That was quite an introduction, so I appreciate that.
No problem. It's true. All facts.
this morning I had more fun getting to know you, Ed, and your career and being a boxing promoter, a radio show host. But you know, I got started. You know, I wanted to be a police officer. My whole life, as a little boy, I knew what I wanted to do, and I went to a career day my senior year in high school. There was an Orange County Sheriff's Deputy there, and I went to Laguna Hills High School. There was an Orange County Sheriff's Deputy there, and after talking to him for about 15 minutes, I knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life. And I went home. I told my dad. I said, "Dad, I'm going into law enforcement." And he says, "Absolutely not."
Oh, okay.
you're going to be an entrepreneur. And so I kind of, you know, I had a lot of respect for my dad, so I kind of, right. I left it alone. Right. One of my good friends got hired with the LA Sheriff's Department, and he called me to his house about a year later, and he had all his equipment laid out. He's like, "Why don't you do a ride-along?" So I went to Carson, the city of Carson, and right. I get in the car. And our first call was a bank robbery in progress.
Oh, that's got to be exciting.
Super exciting. So, you know, rolling code 3 down the opposite side of the road, jumping across medians. I'm like, wow, this is exactly what I wanted to do.
So when they do a ride along and there's something happening like that, they don't just dump you out somewhere and go by themselves. They take you with them.
He took me with them.
That's cool.
It was awesome. Yeah. And so I got home, told my dad that this is what I'm going to do against his wishes, and I got hired with the LA Sheriff's Department, and you know, kind of you walk through my career path,
right?
But it's been an amazing ride,
right? Well, and to end up as police chief of this community, that is an amazing ride. I can imagine that. Do you do ride-alongs?
I do. I go out with the officers, and I also go out in my own car.
Right.
And I go out in the city and follow up officers on calls every once in a while, right, when I have some time.
And do you miss patrolling? Do you miss that part of it?
Oh my God! Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm behind a desk. I'm out in the community, but yeah, that is why I got started in this career.
Right.
Is to help people and to be out in the field and engage people. And yeah, so I do miss it, and it's fun going out with the troops, because they are, you know, today's officer is, you know, at least, you know, our staff, you know, they're educated, and I watch them so proud when they engage people. They're right. Just, you know, they're so smart, and the way they de-escalate and handle you know, people out in the field is just. They do tremendous work every day.
Right. Now, my second question out of the gate was going to be, I figured when I was setting this up, I figured, well, his parents both had to be police officers, both of them. But no, your dad didn't want you to do this. Was he an entrepreneur?
He was.
Okay.
Yeah. He went to Compton High School, actually.
Okay.
And his first job was he was a hairdresser.
Okay.
And ended up owning like 5 barbershops. And growing up, he ended up purchasing the 76 station off of Oso and the 5 freeway.
Okay. Oh, that's a good spot.
It's a great spot.
That's a good spot.
So not only all my brother's friends worked there, me and my friends worked there. So I put on my resume that I was a petroleum transfer engineer for my first job. So I pumped gas.
Right.
but me and all my high school buddies love working down there.
Right.
And, you know, it was kind of his pathway, but it wasn't mine.
Right. And were they worried about the danger of being a police officer or just the life that you would live as a police officer? What was it that they wanted to keep away from?
Yeah. I think they were worried about me, you know, and the danger of it.
Right.
But when I graduated from the LA Sheriff's Academy.
Right.
That was the proudest I've ever seen my dad.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was an amazing moment.
That's cool. As you think about your job now, and you said sitting behind a desk and you worry about the other things that you never really thought of when you were a patrolman, you worry about those things. You worry about numbers and budgets and stuff that you just didn't think about when you got into it. What's on your wish list for things to improve policing here, whether it's a form of technology or the basics, cars or motorcycles, weaponry, additional officers. Do you have a wish list?
Not currently. I don't have a wish list, but what I am doing is, you know, I'm looking at, you know, speaking with all the officers and professional staff at the police department, speaking with community members, working with our new city manager, Sheree Dupuy. She's been fantastic.
She's phenomenal.
She's been phenomenal. She's listening. She's listening to me and, you know, kind of where we need to go with the police department. But just, you know, kind of I'm in the information gathering stage right now.
Okay.
But, you know, I'll have a plan, you know, here in the next 6 or 7 months, right, you know, on where we want to take the organization.
So you're compiling a wish list, kind of.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I want to talk about the community outreach officers for just a moment. They do fantastic work. And for the amount of contacts that they have, it's Brian Greep and Zach Martinez?
Correct.
Correct. Realistically, how many more community outreach professionals do you think we need in this town? And if you are budgeted for them, would you consider non-uniformed professionals?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the... You know, we in Orange County, Laguna Beach has set the gold standard for how we manage our homeless. And, you know, our two, you know, it started with Jason Ferris, who's currently a sergeant, as our first community outreach officer. And he really set the bar high on how we, you know, engage our homeless on a day-to-day basis. You know, and we went through some growing pains with the alternate sleeping location, first it being a lottery. And now now that it's an enrollment program, they've got a lot more traction with getting people into permanent supportive housing. But Officer Greep and Officer Martinez, they're amazing. I do walk-alongs with them every once in a while, and just to see the way they engage, you know, our homeless and the outreach that they provide and the successes that they've had. Getting people back into permanent supportive housing or into detox or, you know, helping them get into some type of psychiatric facility. They're out there on a day-to-day basis doing that. But with that being said, I don't think we need more uniformed police officers out there doing that. We need mental health clinicians, outreach and engagement, social workers. Right. Really, you know, when you're wearing the uniform, you can only get so far with somebody that's homeless.
Right.
Because there's that barrier there.
Right. The uniform itself is a barrier sometimes.
The uniform itself is a barrier.
Okay.
And so, you know, we can provide all the services that we want, but it really takes, in certain cases, it takes somebody else that's not in uniform to take that extra step to help get them into services.
Now, Greep and Martinez, they have amazing people skills. I've actually watched from afar. I've watched them, and they have amazing people skills. Are those the kind of skills that you would demand from the rest of the police force? Those kind of people skills?
Absolutely. You know, and having the officers understand that on a day-to-day basis, you know, even during traffic stops, you know, they could, you know, contact somebody that has mental illness. And so, you know, we teach de-escalation.
Right.
Everything that we do is on body-worn camera or mobile video system. So we can always look back and see, you know, how the officer did through, you know, quality assurance. But, you know, on a day-to-day basis, your police officers here in Laguna are professional and they're trained and they understand de-escalation techniques.
I want to talk about Ranger, the police dog that we all knew and loved. And first of all, my condolences on the loss of Ranger, on the loss of Ranger recently. At home, Anne Marie and I, we rescue and adopt elderly dogs. And I've said many times that Ranger was my favorite officer on the force. I've said this before on air. It was a love. You know, you get a love when you have met Ranger. How can you compete with Ranger? You can't, right? A question about Ranger's care in the final months and the red tape that a city has to sift through for something like that. This is the minutia part of your job. It's working with other directors and meeting budgets. We can all agree that the animal shelter serves this community and its displaced or injured pets as well as can possibly be imagined. It's a no-kill shelter with help from the city and the nonprofit PUP. It makes it one of the best places in Orange County for a pet to end up and to eventually be adopted by a loving family. So I can explain it to the listeners. There are two accounts for animal shelter donated funds. The estate donation fund, where donations usually come from the estates of people who have passed away. And those donations usually come up with written conditions that the donated funds be spent specifically for the benefit of the animal shelter. And secondly, a smaller $5,000 fund funded by donations by people with the belief that the money would be spent to the benefit of the animal shelter. The police department, during Ranger's care, utilized some of that funding for Ranger's care. We all wanted Ranger's cancer to be fully addressed. Would it have been more appropriate to use Ranger's cancer treatment and be paid for out of the police fund?
Well, let me walk you back a little bit. So, okay. We picked up and selected Ranger on October 31st, 2014. He was an amazing asset to our city. His handler, Corporal Zach Fillers, they were out there on a day to day basis. Not only identifying bad people, but also taking drugs off the street, guns off the street. And, he, towards the end of his life, he got identified with cancer. I received the letter yesterday from PUP. And so I'm going to have to look into it a little further on, where those funds actually, why those funds are actually pulled out of that account. Okay. To pay for his care. But overall, the estation donation account is for the benefit of the shelter. And so, I'm going to be looking at different things at the shelter. New software programs and things like that that will actually be coming out of those accounts to make the shelter more efficient and effective.
Okay. All right. This was the big discussion right before you became permanent chief. And without slamming former Chief Thompson for any reason, but when he was selected as chief, my first thought, as being a citizen here forever, my first thought was, oh, they picked the wrong guy for the job. It should have been Calvert. I thought that, and I'm sure other people did. Did you think the same thing?
Not getting into the details of this.
Right, we won't get into the specifics of it, but what were your thoughts when they chose someone else from somewhere else?
When I first started my career, I never wanted to be the chief of police.
Wanted to be the guy on the street.
I wanted to be the guy on the street. And, opportunities presented themselves, and I've been very fortunate to have the support internally and externally in the community. At this organization. I love this community. I love the organization. And so, working as a captain for Chief Laura Farinella is really what inspired me to become a police chief. And in fact, the day before the selection was made, she passed me a note and said, I can't wait to pass the baton to you.
Right.
So I was very disappointed not to get the position. But, one of the things I tell my officers is that you're going to have disappointments in your life. And, when those disappointments happen, don't drag your feet down the hallway. And so I went into every one of my briefings and said, this is where we're at, and what do I ask you not to do? Not drag your feet down the hallway. And I'm going to give you 110% while I'm here. And I'm going to support Chief Thompson while he's in the position. And I told Chief Thompson, I'm here to support you. And, I live in the community. And so all the ideas that I had for the organization, I'm gonna share with you. But when I have a parking problem in front of my house after I retire, I want you to come hang out.
Yeah, that's a cool benefit to have right there, man. And you're gonna have parking problems in front of your house. So in your 25 plus years on the force, what do you think has changed most first of all, about the people who commit crimes. And what's changed most about the officers who arrest these people? Or has anything changed at all?
You know, it's I started here in 1996, and after Labor Day, you know, the town got really quiet. And really, with us becoming a, you know, world-renowned destination, you know, we always have been, but with social media, you know, all those local hideaways, you know, are no longer local anymore.
Right.
People know about them. And, you know, so we're, you know, our calls for service, we handle between 55 and 60,000 calls for service every year at the police department. And so, you know, the number of people in town has definitely increased. And so we have to look at different staffing models to make sure that, you know, we can service the community with, you know, excellence.
Right. And recently, this past summer and beforehand, we've found some instances of vandalism, of spray painting the rocks on the beach, for instance. And in South Laguna, West Street and Thousand Steps, would we ever consider putting cameras there and maybe monitoring cameras?
So when we have crimes like that, we do put up cameras, but we have to have power. Right. You know, in some of these remote locations, it's very, very difficult. So just recently, I'm working with the Water District to put additional cameras up at the Carolyn Wood Knoll. It's unfortunate that we have people coming into our community that, you know, want to spray graffiti, you know, right. In our beautiful town.
Right.
You know, I live here, so it irritates me just like every other resident here.
And it's an artist community, and that's not even really good art.
It's not good art.
Their graffiti sucks, man. Yeah, so, well.
And so, you know, we do the best that we can to try to identify, you know, who's doing it, but it's very, very difficult. You know, even when there's camera footage of it happening, trying to identify a suspect, it's not like the movies where, you know, you see somebody on camera and you use this fancy technology and right. identify them through artificial intelligence right. and that, you know, the person's in custody in the next 30 minutes.
Right.
That's not realistic. Right. But we do the best we can. You know, for me, using technology as a force multiplier is important. You know, having, you know, we have automatic license plate readers in town. We have over 60 cameras citywide. And so those have been beneficial tools for us to help identify criminals. But as far as the graffiti, you know, and working with the district attorney's office, you know, even if we catch a perpetrator, right. the district attorney's office is most likely not going to prosecute, unfortunately. Yeah. And so we have those challenges.
That breaks my heart.
It does.
Yeah. And is there a negotiation or they're not going to do it. They're not going to waste their time on it.
They want to catch them red-handed in the act.
Right. They want you to hand them the case on their lap. Here's the finished case. Right.
Absolutely. So, you know, and we've had conversations with them. So, you know, it depends on, you know, if we have somebody that's prolific in town, right. You know, and having those conversations with the district attorney's office to make sure that, you know, we're appropriately prosecuting those individuals right. that are defacing our beautiful community.
Right. Right. And I mentioned what's changed in the past 25 years. One thing I know that has become more prevalent is the use of meth. So how has meth changed the landscape? Has it become so insipid that you're seeing meth users more willing to break the laws now in mindless and shameless ways?
You know, I don't think it's narrowed down just to methamphetamine. You know, we're having a problem. We have an opioid crisis across our entire country. Mm-hmm. The use of fentanyl and opioids, you know, and people are dying, and it's unfortunate. All our officers now carry Narcan on their persons, so when they actually go to a call for service and somebody has died from an opioid overdose or they're about to die, they can actually spray Narcan up their nose, and it brings them back to life. And we've had probably four or five saves.
Wow.
Over the last, you know, 24 months using using Narcan.
Wow. Okay. And every officer carries it?
Every officer carries it.
Okay. When you think of this city in 5 or 10 years, 10 years down the road, what do you see? Where do you see us? Do you envision us 5 years down the road or 10 years? Do you ever, as you're sitting in traffic for 3 minutes from your house, do you envision what we'll look like in 5 or 10 years?
You know, I hope our town never loses its charm. Right. You know, that's why, you know, my wife and I chose to move here permanently. Right. You know, we love this community, and, you know, you know, the although we have our challenges, you know, and we always will, because, you know, this is a destination community. People want to come here. So, you know, envisioning what it looks like 10 years from now, I hope it still looks the same.
Right. And do the planners, does the council, does the city manager come to you as we're growing to ask for your assistance, for your advice? Well, you've just got there. So do you see yourself being involved in the decision-making of how this community grows?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. City manager Sheree Dupuy and I are continually talking, and, you know, I have these conversations with the former chief and John Pteg as well. So, you know, we're always looking at our staffing models and making adjustments to make sure that we're servicing the community appropriately.
Okay. And you mentioned your family. You have a beautiful daughter. You have a beautiful wife and daughter. Your entire family is beautiful, man. You guys should be on a magazine cover.
Well, thank
no
you.
No kidding.
I'm very fortunate. They make me look good. So that's why I like bringing them places.
Hey, look what I got here. Yeah, this is good. Knowing what you know and weighing the good versus the bad in your entire career, would you want your kids, would you want your daughter to pursue a career in law enforcement?
This has been a, this, you know, 30 year career that I've had has been a wonderful journey. So, you know, not only my daughter or, you know, my nephew, I encourage people, if you intrinsically, you know, have a desire to go out there and, help people and have a change of environment every single day, right. You know, I'm mentoring and encouraging people to get in this, profession all the time. You know, yeah, we have challenges, but every profession has challenges. But this has been an absolutely wonderful journey.
And how has you've become chief, and I don't want to say the tail end of COVID because it's really not over, but you've become the tail end of the last surge since you've become chief. How has that changed policing? How has COVID specifically changed policing?
Well, during, 2020, when this, you know, COVID first hit, what the residents don't know is the city executive team, you know, for the first 3 months, we were on 7 day a week calls, Zoom calls, every single day, you know, with the mayor, with, you know, the city manager, with the executive team. And we were making, I mean, it was daily adjustments because we just didn't know.
Right.
We didn't know. So, you know, although, you know, I feel like I want to get us out of the mask.
Right.
You know,
right.
And, you know, I want to get people, you know, if they choose so, to get vaccinated. So, you know, everybody's, you know, safe and healthy. But, you know, this is going to be a challenge. It's going to be an ongoing challenge.
Right. And sticking on that for a second, and you said you'd like to get everyone vaccinated. You were an Orange County sheriff, and we find that here in Orange County, the sheriff's department had the highest rate of COVID among those county departments. What do you think the hesitancy is about generally law enforcement and vaccinations? What's the hesitancy there?
So at least at our police department, we're about 80% vaccinated, okay. which is a pretty good statistic. But it's a personal preference, right. You know, and people have opinions about it.
Right.
You know, so I can't speak to the sheriff's department.
Right. All right.
And, you know, Sheriff Barnes and I actually worked in the jail together in 1996. So we've remained friends since then. So he's a tremendous asset to us in this community as well. If we ever needed mutual aid, you know, I can pick up the phone and give him a call and, you know, have deputies here in a moment.
Right. And this may be the dumbest question I'll ask you, but if you were a sheriff, an Orange County sheriff, or if you were in Sheriff Barnes' position, would you go for mandating vaccinations?
You know, I'm not going to speak to that. You know, it's
you're at 80% here in the city. It appears you don't have to mandate.
Yeah, you know, and so if you're not vaccinated, you have to get tested
right.
Here in the city every single week.
Right.
You know, and so I'm definitely a supporter of that.
Okay. All right. And as I look at you, and as we've been talking, you're young. You're young. Let's call it what it is. You're young. When you decide to finally retire from the police force at some point way in the future, do you see yourself running for political office of any kind? would you like a political you know?
Ed, I just jumped in the into the pool of policy with being police chief.
Give me a break here, man.
It has not crossed my mind
ever.
Yeah.
All right. I think you'd do well. I think you'd do well on the road. I really do.
Thanks, Ed. Well, you know, and you've got a beautiful face too.
For radio. Yeah, I've got the perfect radio face. Before I let you go, growing up, and you said you always knew you wanted to be a police officer. You always knew you wanted to be in law enforcement in some way. Growing up, what were your favorite cop shows? Law and Order, NYPD Blue, The Shield, Dragnet. What did you like? Did you watch them? And which are the most realistic?
You know, I didn't watch a lot of cop shows, but I did watch Chips.
Okay,
and that's not very realistic.
That's so not realistic. Oh, man.
Sorry, I can't get into those other shows.
Ponch and John, right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Starsky and Hutch.
All right. So you weren't a Dragnet fan. You're probably too young for Dragnet or Adam 12, I imagine.
I was a little too young for that.
Right.
I can't remember what his name is, and I should know this, but I actually pulled over one of the actors that was on the show here in Laguna when I was a young patrol officer. And so we got into a great conversation about the show and, you know, why he got pulled over.
Oh, no, buddy, this is realistic. I'll tell you what, you're about to get a ticket. were you ever a motorcycle officer?
I was not.
Okay. You know. And that's a special kind of ilk right there to be out on a motorcycle. You're in harm's way, I think, as a motorcycle officer. You're unattentive drivers. There's all kinds of dangers, I think, to being a motorcycle cop.
You have to be on point, especially in this town.
Right.
You know, at every second. But we have really skilled motor officers, and they train weekly and monthly. Right. To make sure that, you know, they stay on point with, you know, all the distractions in this community. But, you know, they're a tremendous asset to us in dealing with, you know, loud exhaust noise, e-bike enforcement. You know, those are two of the current challenges in the city.
Right. So we're seeing a lot more of those. We're seeing a lot more of the e-bikes. And in a lot of cases, they're not following the same rules down the road as other bicyclists or cyclists or motorcyclists are. Have you noticed a big change in the last several months?
I've seen a change, but it's not just e-bikes. It's bicyclists too.
Right.
And, you know, e-bikes are considered bicycles.
Right.
You know, my main concern, you know, even driving through the community on my off days is the kids that aren't wearing helmets, that aren't wearing shoes, and, you know, running through stop signs. You know, I don't want to see anybody get injured, especially a child. Right. And, you know, publicly I've been pushing back. You know, this is not a police department problem. This is a parental problem.
There you go.
Parents need to step up.
There you go.
And make sure that their kids are wearing shoes and helmets and they have the proper protective gear when they leave their homes.
Right. That's the best thing you've said all day. That's exactly the deal. I find myself thinking that your day has got to be just tremendous in uniform. When you're out of uniform, like you're driving home or whatever, like you're driving around on your day off or something, and you see somebody next to you texting while driving, do you say something? Do you roll down your window? Do you point at them and give them a look? What do you do?
So I've got to have some downtime.
I'm not always working, man.
So, you know, unless it's something, you know, a felony in progress,
right.
I'm not going to get involved in it. But what I do see, you know, when I'm exercising or, you know, I'm out and about in the city, if I see things,
right.
You know, when I come in on Monday, I can have conversations with my team and, you know, we can make sure that we're directing our resources appropriately. That's the great part about being kind of immersed in the community and being police chief is that, you know, I'm always here.
Right.
It's 24/7.
Right.
You know, I can't really turn it off. My wife tells me to put down the phone all the time. Put down the phone. Pay attention to me a little bit.
Right. I could see how you'd be drawn into it too. Well, I got to tell you, I know your time is valuable. I know you're busy, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you stepping in here with us for a little while and having this conversation. What's the rest of your day look like?
So you know, it's I've. Getting to this position, even when I was captain, it's a meeting marathons every single day,
right.
You know, so my schedule is completely impacted with meeting, not only, like I said earlier, you know, with internally with my people, but also externally with the community. I'm doing my best right now to be everywhere,
right.
Ubiquitous, try to be everywhere at once.
Right.
And so I'm being pulled in, 10 different directions, but I have an amazing assistant, Marianne Tracy,
That's all wave to her right now. Hey, Marianne, how are you?
Thank you. She is she's been awesome.
And she did an amazing job putting this together. She was really patient and has your schedule, I guess, just top of mind. Not even on a Rolodex somewhere. It's top of mind. She's got your schedule down.
Yeah.
All right. So once again, you are everywhere. I've saw you at the Top of the World Elementary. I see you everywhere. So I do thank you for your visibility, and I certainly thank you for your cool, honest answers here this morning. Chief of Police Jeff Calvert, our conversation this morning. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.